moving right along with now the last four sons. But I'd like to concentrate on one of them especially. His name is Binyamin. Rachel realizes that this poor child is growing up without a mother, and she calls the child Ben Oni. Aleph Vav Nun Yud Ben Oni. It's interesting that Yaakov refers to Reuven as Reuven Rachis Oni. And that uses the same word, only they really have two different meanings. Rachis Oni means the first of my strength, right? Ki hu Rachis Ono lo mishpat habachora. But here, when she says he is Ben Oni, this is from the Hebrew word Onain. Onain is someone in the deep throes of mourning. The first moments of mourning is called Aninut. Right? It's the period of mourning even before the funeral takes place is called Aninut. So she refers to him as Ben Oni. Now the question we have to ask is, why does Yaakov change that name? So he's, on the face of it, it's probably...
Well, that every time you call him, you should remind him that his mother died.
Right, every time you hear his name, I should be reminded of what a Nebuch I started off, how I started off my life.
Are you saying she named him when she was dying?
She was in the moment of dying, and the midwife said, she said, you know, don't worry, you have a son, as if to say that you're not dying in vain. Remember, at the time, it was, you know, the Bible doesn't tell us how many miscarriages there were in between. To take a baby to full term and to have a living baby was not such a common thing to be time after time. You know, just by way of an anecdote, you have this president's book that tells you everything about each of the presidents of the United States. And the early presidents, it's
Washington
amazing.
Washington outlived all his children.
Washington didn't have children.
His wife had children.
Yes,
they all died.
Yeah, Louis XIV had something like 12 children that all died.
Right. So
a large number, 12, whatever the number.
They usually
14,
say about all of them. It says he had 11 children and 3 lived to adulthood. Or he had 14 children with 2 wives and 4 lived to adulthood. It was really not so such a so. Uh-huh. But in any event. For him to be raised with that name throughout is just a painful reminder. So Yaakov changes his name to Benyamin. So what does it mean? Why Ben Oni, Benyamin? So Rashi says a geographical reason. When you're coming from Aram, right, you're coming from the north to the south, right, the country due south of Israel at the time of the Torah was called Teman, because it was to the right. Because you're facing east, Kedma is east, right? What is west? Yama v'Kedma. Yama, because when you're facing east, what's to your back? Mediterranean.
The east is,
The Yama Tichon.
Right.
So Yama v'Kedma. So if you left is north, right? And right is south.
Okay.
The reason why the word for north is Tzafon is because it's hidden. Tzafon. Matzpunim, it's like hiding the Afikoman, so Tzafun. The right is called Yamin, the south is called Yamin because it's to your right when you're facing east. Anyway, so Rashi says he's called Benyamin because he was the son of mine born in the south. While the other sons were born outside of Israel, in Aram. Mm-hmm. This child was born in Israel, in Benyamin, so Benyamin.
The ironic thing is that Binyaminis were
lefties. I'm going to get to that. Very good, yes.
What's your mean east?
Yamin means south. Right. South, to the right. When you're facing east, your right is south. Mm-hmm. So I'll get to that in a moment. There's another simpler pshat probably, is Benyamin means, I don't expect to have any children after this. This is the son of my oldest age.
Yes, Yamin.
The Ben, like Baba Yamin, Benyamin. Alright, so Nun, not a Mem. Okay, Benyamin. Okay, the child of my. See, what she? It's very clear why she's calling him Ben Oni. She says so in the text, and it just says Aviv Karalo Benyamin, and then it became one word. So now I saw in the Sefer Chassidim. You've heard of Sefer Chassidim, Rabbi Yehuda Chassid. He has his halachic book is called Sefer Chassidim. He has a parish to the Torah. that came out about 30 years ago by a man named Yitzchak Langer, put it out. I mention his name because he's the subject of not one but two tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein about the book. Some other time I'll give a share on that. Anyway, in the Perush of Rabbi Nachosid, he says that Yaakov would use Binyamin to accompany him. He would, as his youngest son, he would accompany him to walk with him. So when Yaakov is standing by, Binyamin is standing by him to make sure that Yaakov doesn't fall. So Binyamin uses his right hand to hold on to Yaakov. So his left hand is open for proficiency to do the things that he has to do while he's holding on to his father. Binyamin is very famous for its left-handedness in Tanakh. It says in the end of Sefer Shoftim that they were all left, they trained themselves to be using both hands. Mm-hmm. And very famously, there's in one of the Shoftim, remember his name?
Iter Yad Yamini, but what's his name? The first one who goes up.
And he killed the king of Moab.
Otniel ben Knaz, I think.
No. Ehud ben Gera.
Eglon
Melech Moab. So what happened was, he came in to bring the tribute, the annual tribute to the king of Moab that the Jews had to give. And when they frisked him to make sure he wasn't armed, when you're a righty, you take your arm from the left side. So they checked his left side. They didn't bother checking his right side. So he was able to pull his weapon out the other way. So that's how he got in to see the king with a small little knife. Mm-hmm. But he used it quite proficiently on the king.
Lefty or ambidextrous?
So that's a good question. Probably ambidextrous. It means that they... So iter yad yamin, as Dr. Sidorsky just said, literally means weak in the right side. Mm-hmm. But it appears from the end of Sefer Shoftim that they were just simply proficient in both hands. Right? That means you can shoot an arrow all kinds of ways, and etc. Okay, so that explains the name Binyamin. Now let's work on this past week's parsha of how Yaakov puts all the brothers in such danger for the sake of Binyamin. Did Binyamin have any say in this? Did he step up and say, Dad, listen, you're doing to me what you did to Yosef. Right? Mm. But you see, the brothers don't resent it. There's no resentment on their part. For all the things we've been discussing of what Yosef is trying to accomplish with last week's parsha, he wants to realize his dreams, he felt his dreams were prophetic and he had to make them come true. He wanted to rake the brothers over the coals and make them remember all the terrible things they did to him, right? Mm-hmm. Right? He called them spies, he called, just all the things, whatever they did to him, he does to them now. It's a cleansing, right? So, yes, it's really a cleansing for Sefer Bereishis, right? Do you understand what I mean by that? Bereishis needs to be fixed because there's just people who are, not just brothers, but Yavram doesn't get along with Lot either. And remember, their shepherds fight and they have to separate. People who are supposed to be close can't get along in this book. If Sefer Bereishis is the story of the individual family, so to say, the unit, Shmos is going to be the El Shmos B'nai Yisrael, the nation. The nation is not going to get off onto a good start unless we resolve something here in Sefer Bereishis. And it's getting worse. So Yosef attempts to fix things, right? Mm-hmm. He tries to get in there and cleanse the brothers. And if his purpose was to test the brothers to see that they regret the way they treated one brother, especially a son of Rachel, and to see whether they're ready to treat another brother that way, mm-hmm. Yosef has to be inspired, because the way they're talking about Binyamin, if they're, this one is missing, this one is gone, and they said, and he won't send it. He sees that the brothers don't resent it. They're standing up for him. Mm-hmm. You might have expected if they behaved like they did with Yosef, they'd say, "Why did you have to take that cup? What's the matter with you?" The cup is, after all, in his place. Yeah. But there's another thing that they must atone for that we still have not determined, and that is rhetorically found in this coming week's parsha, when the brothers learn of who Yosef is. He identifies himself to them. His first statement after he says, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai.
Who's my father?
Is daddy alive? So what? Yosef, hit yourself on the head. What has Yehuda been saying this long soliloquy?
Well, yeah. He knows he's alive. Is he living?
Okay, that's actually Bereishis Rabba's answer. I want to say a pshat before I say the drash of what I'm trying to get at here. A pshat that Abravanel tells us is that although Yehuda has just been saying if we have to come home without Binyamin, our elderly father will die. He doesn't mention anything about the fact that this guy himself has 10 sons, because Yehuda didn't obligate himself to those sons. He obligated himself to his father, right? Mm-hmm. So Yehuda's saying everything about the father. So Yosef may be saying the following. Okay, Yehuda, I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed to how you feel about your father. Do you remember 20 years ago when I was in that pit and I told you the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
I said, listen, I'll make it up. I'll stop with the dreams. I'll give away the coat. I won't. No evil reports.
Doesn't say just, that in the text.
No, of course not. But I'll just you let. Think so. Don't do this to me. And said, forget about me. Me, all right. I'm a nothing.
Think about
what it's going to be like to face father with coming home. So Yehuda is Oda Vichai is he's possibly telling him this. And can you pass me down the chumash while I'm thinking this? Is that it could be, I hope it's not, but it could be that you're fabricating this whole thing to give yourselves an excuse that I should lighten up on you. In other words, this whole time you've been fabricating this thing about a father. You don't have a living father, right? Now that you know I'm Yosef and the charade is up, and fabricate any kind of situation in order to get out of this.
Is he really alive?
Right? What he needs to get from them, because they're going to say, "You're Yosef the whole time." What's the matter with you? You know, they could turn angry with him. Yeah. Why did you put us through all this? Yosef?
But they can't, because he's in a position.
He's in a position of power.
Yes. They wouldn't talk to him that way, no doubt. They're so.
They wouldn't,
overcome.
Because if they think he's still so angry, he can throw them in jail, all of them.
So they say Kikamocha Kaparo, but Moshe, I'm not going to come right back to you, but. So Yosef wants to make sure that they have adequately.
No.
For adequately atoned for the way they treated the brother, and now we're trying to make sure that you're adequately atoning for the way you treated our father. Do you remember back in Parshas Toldos that Esav said, Yakum Yemei Evel Aviv Ahago Es Yaakov Achi. As soon as my father dies, I'm going to kill my brother. That's a sentiment that the brothers of Yosef did not share. Remember, they didn't say, "All right, we would like to kill him, but how can we do that? Think of what the old man will say." Right? By the way, in next week's parsha, the Mefarshim say that Yosef avoided his father. He didn't want to be near his father.
What do you mean? When?
Because to the point that Yaakov didn't even recognize Yosef's two sons. Remember, he said, "Who are these boys?" when he brought them for bracha, right?
I mean, after they came down, Yosef avoided his father.
Constantly avoiding his father.
Because he felt guilty that he didn't get in touch with him.
Yosef. I saw one.
It would be too hard for him to tell what the brothers did.
Because Yosef was wondering, did they forget about me? It's been a long time. Why didn't someone,
Why didn't someone look for him?
I don't know. Okay, but he must be wondering, what did they think of me? They gave up on me. So he finds out that Yaakov has not, but Let's get back to why Yosef is avoiding Yaakov. The Medrash says that every single minute, of every single moment that Yaakov had with Yosef, he was badgering him with...
What happened to you?
What happened to you? I sent you out to seek this piece of your brother.
Which this is in Midrash?
Yeah, but it's Mashma. Mm-hmm. Now that every moment Yaakov is telling him, Yosef, we had you for dead. Okay, I'll give you. Maybe he did ask him, why didn't you get in touch with me for 9 years? You were in power. You know, it would have taken you 1 week to get me a word. You know,
all right.
But okay, we'll put that aside. But Yaakov was constantly badgering Yosef to tell him what happened that day. Now Yosef has to do a little repenting himself, because Yosef brought some of this enmity upon himself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting medrash that says that the Beis HaMikdash could only be built in the land of Binyamin.
Because he was the only one that wasn't born.
He's the only one who didn't participate
in the sale of Yosef. See, so wait a second, Yosef didn't participate in the sale of Yosef. Yes, he did.
He caused it.
He was instrumental.
So the fact is, though, that before the temple was built in Jerusalem, the holy city was Shiloh for almost 400 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in the land of Yosef. Okay, now there are a whole bunch of questions. I'll take them now. Yes, go down in this direction. Go.
The Hamikdash is in a very neutral spot. It doesn't belong to any Shevet.
That is true. That's what Chazal say. But they say that about all of Yerushalayim. But physically speaking, it's like the UN is physically in New York, yes. Even though it's...
independent.
International.
So yes, the Beis HaMikdash itself straddles between Yehuda and Binyamin, but the building called the Beis HaMikdash, the Har HaBayis, but the building called the Beis HaMikdash is in the land of Binyamin. So you say, because it says when Moshe blesses Binyamin, he says, Bein Kesefav Shochein, God resides between the shoulders of Benjamin. So the topography, when you're looking from Hebron, you're looking from far, the Har HaBayis looks like a head between two shoulders. There's Mount Olives on one side, and then there's Western Jerusalem on the other side. So the Shechina, as you could sort of say, can't reside on anyone responsible for the sale of Yosef. It's an amazing thing. Okay.
Is Yosef skilled? No, you know, the theory, Thomas Mann, Joseph believed he would be the fourth patriarch.
Yes, that's found in
some
of the Mephoshim.
And of course, there is the evidence there that when they come to divide the land, like the patriarchs, Joseph doesn't get a portion; his children get the portion.
It's two of them for the children. So yes, that is if that's what they felt that you know, and everyone else falls out. The others seem to fall out. Everyone but the patriarch falls out. Everyone but Yitzchak falls out. Everyone but Yaakov falls out. So Yosef, is that what you want for us? So they didn't take that kindly. Yes.
Did Yosef really cause his sell because, I mean, or his brothers to sell him? Because even if, let's say, he gave evil reports, but would that really warrant almost getting killed and then being sold to Goyim?
No, I'm not saying that. But he
He didn't
I'm
make
just,
himself laugh.
Just saying.
His father rebuked
him. The explanation that we might give to why it's someone at 17 years old would behave in this way, which does eat smack of some degree of immaturity. You have to know at that age that you don't speak this way. So I think we said this maybe last time, is that Yosef really thought his dreams were prophetic. That there was prophecy in them. Because in the Torah, Vayeshev ends with the words Hashem Diber Mi Lo Yinoveh in Sefer Amos. Really thought that, as prophecy, you know, there's a cloud. You have to speak prophecy. Navi Shekoveshes Nevuaso is a very serious infraction.
And the literary point is, they did come true, but not in the way he expected.
Yes, it's always an irony like that. And the fact that his dreams are that they reflect a preoccupation with things that are not Hebrew but that are Egyptian.
Mm-hmm.
He should have dreamt of 12 sheep or 12 shepherd staffs bowing to his or to him or something like that. So by dreaming of farming and dreaming of astrology or astronomy, he's showing something about the need, right? The need to prepare ourselves for where we're ending up.
Yeah.
And the brothers might have felt that, you know, they, okay, go ahead, see how it goes. Let's see, we'll send you there first. Yeah. So of course, that's not exactly how it was, but he does prepare the way for them. Who knows what if Yosef isn't there? Let's say Yosef gets killed on the way down to Egypt, right? The famine's coming anyway, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the brothers go down for food. You know what's I don't know what it's interesting because the Ramban says that the exile in Egypt was a punishment for Avraham so readily leaving Canaan in chapter mm-hmm. 12. Ravanel says that the exile in Egypt is a punishment for the sale of Yosef. Okay, yes, Moshe.
Also, Rebbe says that it was because Abraham used his 12 scholars to fight the war.
That's a Gemara in Nedarim, the Flamed Beis, yes.
But also, now, Yosef spent 22 years away from Yaakov. Yaakov spent 22 years away from Yitzchak.
Yes.
Is this like a balancing, and were they really alive? When you're away from your parents for 20 years, are you really alive?
So that's the question is, are the parents alive? But yes, there's no doubt that what, as Dr. Sidorsky has told us many occasions here, the book of Genesis is filled with these trends and ironies and the low being raised and then the high being brought low. This is what sapiential literature is all about, and it means that the wisdom literature of man. And the Yosef story, of course, where it's not just that all is well that ends well. It's a very nice ending. But what you see in Yosef throughout the story is that he is not belaboring on the misfortune. He is turning. He always turns the misfortune into something that's beneficial, which is a great challenge for us. Mm-hmm. Easy to say after the good thing comes, but it's the key is to say this when the bad thing is happening.
Yes.
Was the famine in Egypt going to take place anyway, or did it only take place because that was Hashem's way of, freeing Yosef out of jail and then having him escalating on the social ladder?
That might just depend on your commentary. Like someone like Ibn Ezra, the Rambam is going to say that was happening anyway. There are certain famines that have to come at certain times and certain points, and that's just the regular
cycle
of any land.
Yeah.
And Yosef, the dreamer and the prophet, is this time not using his own dream but someone else's dream to determine this. I think so. And that's why there's so many dreams here in this part of Bereishis. And so let's get back to the fathers and sons. I would like to contrast. Now let's open the Chumash for this. I would like to contrast the way that Reuven and the way that Yehuda tried to convince their father to send Binyamin.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. We're on page 240. Mm-hmm. Actually, to the page before that, 238. I may have posed the question to you before, or maybe it was in the Sunday morning shiur. I just don't get Yaakov. Why are you putting everyone in danger over Binyamin? It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make halachic sense even. I mean,
what
you know, the rabbis didn't mind that Yaakov wouldn't make sense, but they don't want him to go against the halacha, right? How are you putting everyone in danger for him, right? So the answer is that Binyamin's brother died baderech. His mother died baderech, so he is in greater danger than everyone else. Baderech, so I will not send him baderech. I don't know
what
made Yosef died on the way.
The sale was on the road.
He sent him on the road, and he didn't come back. So as far as he's concerned, his brother's dead, and right. So his mother died while we were traveling, and the same might happen to him. So he's in graver danger. Okay, so that's why I'm not sending him. Okay, and we don't see the brothers conspiring against Binyamin, right? The way they behaved with him. Ah, there's a good reason for that. Binyamin ostensibly didn't bring bad reports against them.
Yeah.
Right? They're older now. They're, and they get it. They understand.
They have their own kids. Maybe now they get it
more. It's very very possible. It's very possible that we see. Listen, we understand. Dad never meant to have any of us. He just wanted to marry Rachel. Right. So maybe they're getting it. So they remember they're now starting to get hungry again. That guy down there was pretty mean to us the first time, but we're ready to go back to him. Mm-hmm. Right. We have a real problem is that we found all our money in our sacks, mm-hmm. So we may be coming into a dangerous situation again. If they think that we stole that, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be the most pleasant thing in the world, but it's certainly worse than what we have now. It can't be any worse than what we have now. Here we will certainly, in fact, Rashi says it this way. Here if we do nothing, we'll certainly die. Let's at least try something. Mm-hmm. We may die also, but at least we're trying something. Mm-hmm. Right? Maybe there's a good ending to this.
Yeshua.
So Yaakov says, Meshoy Meifenisht. Svetnisht gate. So he doesn't let them go. So Reuven tries to convince his father. Alright? Look at Pasuk Lamed Zion. Vayomer Reuven. Everyone have it? Mm-hmm. It's 238, Pasuk 37.
Yeah.
Vayomer Reuven El Aviv, Lemor. Es Shnei Banai Tomis im Lo Avi Enu Elecha. Take my two sons to kill them if I don't bring them.
Can't you make him feel better to kill his grandchildren?
No, so all your divine.
He's so mixed up.
Sounds so stupid.
Okay,
he's so mixed up.
If we understand it this way, they'll say that Yaakov says, Reuven, come on. How will it console me that I lose two sons? Well, at least I get to kill two grandchildren. No, but that's not what Reuven's saying.
It's not what Reuven's
saying. Of course, that's not what he's saying.
You can have my sons as your children?
No. So sure am I that I will bring them home. And he's just trying to be, he's exaggerating. Right? You ever see over my dead body, where I swear on the life of my father and my mother. You ever see people saying these things? He goes, No, you're not serious. You're just trying to be convincing. I might say, like the Meiri says in the Gemara Bava Metzia, that when the Gemara says you should rather jump into a fiery furnace rather than embarrass someone publicly. So it doesn't mean that you're going to jump in and die. It means that you should. This is how much you should avoid embarrassing someone else, as if though you're killing himself or yourself, right? So here when he says, "Daddy, I'm going to you take my two sons," when Yaakov looks at him and says, "Reuven, you're just being Reuven again.
Yeah.
You always have good intentions. Always have, but you know what? That's the pavement to hell.
Yeah.
Is that you? Yaakov may not know this, of course, but we know that he had good intentions not to sell Yosef and to bring him home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yehuda wanted to make some money on the deal, but Reuven has better intentions than Yehuda in the original story, right? Yeah. Reuven wants to take him home, but just doesn't. What difference does it make if you intend to get him home? You're not better than the ones who didn't get him home. Right? It says in the Pasuk
that
Reuven Laman Hovi Yoso El Aviv. The Gemara says if he had known that the Bible would write such a thing, he would have picked him up and taken him on his shoulders and carry him home in front of everybody. But he was just
and to throw him into a pit full of
that's Yehuda.
Things.
That's Yehuda.
It was his
that's the next thing, that's Yehuda. So that's, Reuven was always with the good intentions. He started even before Mechiras Yosef in such a way. What am I talking about?
Moving the bed?
Yes. According to Rashi, moving the bed, or according to the Pashtanim, whatever, he did something with Bilhah, right? You have good intentions. The rabbis, it's an interesting morality play. The rabbis are willing to give Reuven a pass on really despicable behavior, right? Because he had good intentions. He was looking for his mother's honor. You ever see the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, why the Gemara says that Reuven didn't actually sleep with Bilhah? Because, this is amazing, you know, very late in the Torah, in Parshas Kisavo, it says that six tribes would stand on one side of a mountain, and six tribes would stand on another side of a mountain, right? And it lists the six tribes. So Reuven's tribe was on one side of the mountain, and they were each to recite certain curses. Yes.
Right.
The first curse that Reuven's side recited was, "Cursed is the man who sleeps with his father's wife, and the entire congregation shall answer, Amen." So the Gemara says, is it possible that Reuven would be put on the side saying that if he actually did sleep with his father's wife? Right? So, all right, when he does take her, it says, Pilegesh Aviv. But Bilhah is called Eshes, Neshe Aviv, quite a few times already. So, okay, it doesn't matter. I go with, Lisa's right, he just moved it. Whatever he did there, he was Pachas Kamayim. It's unstable. Right? So when Yaakov veritably curses Reuven, you know, he says, come over, guys, so come over to my bedside, let me tell you what's going to happen in the future. These are not blessings, these are predictions. How do I know? Because the first three of them are not blessings at all. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi do not get blessed. Those are really not blessings. Right? He gets even with them. So now I want to turn back to what I said about 20 minutes ago. Yosef was avoiding his father this whole time, to the point that his father, when his father saw Yosef's two grown grandchildren,
he didn't recognize them.
So there's all kinds of drushes about it. They looked, they had Egyptian haircuts, they had Egyptian clothes, they're wearing their Egyptian sandals, so he didn't recognize them. Maybe. But instead, what I'd like to suggest is that Yaakov wanted Yosef to tell him what happened that day. And Yosef didn't want to face such a thing. He didn't want to lie to his father, and he doesn't want to tell him.
Right.
Now Yosef has to do some tshuva too, because remember what we said before about why the Beis HaMikdash couldn't be built in Yosef's territory either,
right?
Because he brought bad reports on them. Now he has to go the other way. He has to go and go to the other extreme. He would be probably within his just rights to tell Daddy, it wasn't a great day that day. I caught up with them, and it did something to me, but you know what? It was all part of God's plan. Like he convinced the brothers when he told them this, right? Dad, you can understand that. Right? Yosef is not vindictive with them, right? It's a shame and maybe even a tragedy that after Yaakov died, the brothers thought that Yosef would kill them. It means that there was not a true reconciliation. I'll get to that shortly. But
they never apologize.
Okay, it would appear that, and he doesn't seem to forgive them. He excuses them, he explains them, he understands what he's very, very sapiential, like they said, like I said before.
And he doesn't say another bad report to his father.
Right, so the fact that he...
That's his atonement of what he did before.
I think if Yosef was really vindictive, he could have embellished on what they did to him. You hear what I'm saying? Yaakov would believe anything he'd say about what happened that day. They put me in that pit and I saw a scorpion and I saw a snake and I said, please, please, I'm going to die a terrible death. Please, think of Daddy. What? And he said, well, we can't wait to see him suffer when we tell him. After all, he put us through with you, giving you that coat and listening to your side of the story all the time. We can't wait to see him suffer for losing you. Right? If Yosef said something like that, Yaakov would believe him. And you know what that would happen then? What Dr. Sidorsky said before, Yosef would have been the fourth patriarch. Because Yaakov would have done to all of them what he did to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. What he did to Shimon and Levi for what they did in Shechem, just think of what Yaakov would do to all of them if Yosef really said what happened that day or embellished on it.
Yes.
Right? But that's not Yosef. Okay? So, The reader just has a cryptic and enigmatic statement where Yaakov looks at Yosef's two children and says, who are these boys?
Mm-hmm.
What? Who are these boys? I just saw my two grandsons today. I didn't recognize them. Right?
We hope so.
I mean, who are these boys? So they're, again, they're all, again, could be a rhetorical question, could be all kinds of explanations. I'm just rendering one of them that's found in the Medrash. Moshe, yes.
So why wasn't your faith vindictive? I mean, he was devised for it. He could have taken our lives if he wanted to. He just wasn't.
Because he is. That's what it means to be. That's why this is one of the greatest. I keep calling sapiential stories in ancient literature.
Yeah.
This is what it means to rise above the expectation.
In our pasuk, Edechai Anochi Mavakesh.
Right. That's great. Yeah. He asks. The man. That's back in Parshas Vayeshev. Yeah. It's drash, but it really speaks to a pshat that Yaakov tells his brothers, "Go to Shechem, lidrosh l'shlom achechem." Now, on one face of it, I can't say it would be poor parshanut to say, "Spy on them and tell me what they're doing," because they're supposed to be tending sheep. I don't want to go there, but it could be. But I think more likely, go to Shechem, where for once the brothers banded together to fight for a sibling. Mm-hmm. All right, albeit it was safe, it wasn't any competition for them, but they banded together to fight for a sibling and go there. That's a place where you'll find an opportunity to seek the peace and goodwill of your brethren. But when he asks about them, remember what they said? What he was told, Nasu mizeh. Rashi says, "Nasu min ha'achva." They're not your behaving like your brothers anymore.
They're not.
Of course not. They were ready to sell them, which they did. So they sold them in a place called Dotan.
Why is Yaakov sending Yosef there? What was it? What happened? In
I would think that Shimon and Levi saved Dina from.
Oh, I see.
Now, right. Mm-hmm. Yosef would probably be within his rights to say, "Daddy, you know they hate me.
Yeah.
You're sending me into the jaws of the lion." Now, Yaakov probably had to live with himself all that time, knowing that he did send him to the jaws of this lion.
Yeah.
Right? And then he probably felt very guilty himself. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Reuven says, "Take my two boys and kill them if I don't bring Binyamin back." I just see this, what we call in Hebrew, derech haflaga. He's just exaggerating to say how much. There's no way Reuven would let Yaakov do this if he doesn't come back with Binyamin, and no way that Yaakov himself would want to. Right? You just have to be very careful in the Bible when people speak this way. Mm-hmm. They're expected to come through. Think of Yiftach. Mm-hmm. First thing that comes out, right? So okay. So let's look at Yehuda though. Turn the page to 240. Now, when Yehuda says, Yaakov goes to the boys and say, "Listen, we need food, we're starving." And Yehuda says, "Daddy, I wanted to go back some months ago. If you let me go then, I could have been back and forth twice with food. But you're not letting us go, right? We can't go. We're not gonna try to get food from that guy without Binyamin, because it's not gonna help. We're gonna go for nothing. Mm-hmm. And we're just gonna use food and extra fuel and resources traveling there for nothing, right? So we're not gonna get anywhere unless you give us Binyamin." So Yaakov goes a little postal on them, and he says, "Why did you have to tell them that you have a younger brother at home?" Right? So what they tell Yaakov at that point is, I'm sorry to say, a lie. Mm-hmm. He said, "That man asked us, Sha'ol Sha'ol, he asked us, is your father alive? Do you have a brother?" Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
No, they
in the text,
they didn't say that.
They told him that. So if they're getting away with lying to their father, how does Yehuda get away with lying to him to his face? Because when he says to them, "Okay, you can go home, I just want him, right? You can all go home, I want the one who had the cup. You with me, right?"
Yes.
So Yehuda says, "Like, actually, the whole good stuff comes up, it's very, very emotional." And he says, You asked us if we have a brother and a father. And the reader is... But it's one thing to tell that to Yaakov. Yaakov doesn't know. But you can't lie to that guy to his face. Yeah. Yosef did not ask. They volunteered that information about a brother. So Bravanel answers the question amazingly. Bravanel says, when they said in the beginning of Vayigash, not yet, it's Yehuda who says it. I'll just read it. It says, Adoni sho'alis avodov lemar hayesh lachem av oach. So the English here reads, my Lord has asked his servant, saying, have you a father or a brother? So the simple answer I would give, if Yehuda is telling the truth, is that Yosef did ask that. It's just not
recorded.
It's not recorded. The Bible doesn't record every single thing. Okay. He did ask. It's just not written in the Pasuk. However, Bravanel says a different pshat, because the Bible isn't written with question marks. Right? If you read the Pasuk this way, it says, Al yichar apcha b'avadecha k'kamocha k'faro. Adoni sho'alis avadov le'mor hayesh lechem avoach. Did you ask us if we have a father or a brother? No! We volunteered that information to you. You get it?
Where is this? Which?
This is verse, the first third, the third verse in page 250 in Vayigash. No, the second verse, your test. Did you ask us if we have a father or a brother? In other words, if you're reading it as a statement, you asked us if we have a father and a brother, and we answered you. Why did you have to ask us for it? Because you wanted to steal, you wanted to take our butt. What are you doing? Why are you doing all this to us? Right? You get that? I have an additional question on this before we get back to Yehuda. When the brothers were confronted with the accusation that one of them stole that expensive cup that Yosef used to determine which is the older brother, which was, you know, mm-hmm. it says that he told them who's the oldest to the youngest. Right? So, remember the brothers' reaction to that? They were confronted, the Medrash says it was...
Didn't they say, now we've been found, you know, our guilt is...
They said the Kal V'Chomer. They said the Kal V'Chomer. They said, we were overly honest. We brought back the money that was at the top of our bags.
Right.
Right, now we're going to steal?
Right.
That Kal V'Chomer can be slugged up. Maybe that was a con job.
Yeah.
Right, right.
To get extra honest, to get the big prize.
Right.
Which is that cup.
Okay. It's a prophecy.
So that's another example. Every Kal V'Chomer is shlug upable. So they said, but they still said it. We were overly honest. Now we're going to be gone of him and steal your cup. So they pronounced sentence. What was the sentence they pronounced? At the end of this, we just read it. The one who stole it shall die.
Right.
And the rest of us, 10 others, will be slaves to you in Egypt.
Right.
So sure am I, again, talking out of turn here, so sure am I that not one of us took that cup. So again, he starts from the oldest to the youngest, you know, to make Mr. Fiss and Dick, right? The Medrash says that it was Menashe who ran after them. They all ripped their clothes. That's why he gives them a change of clothes before he sends them home. They all ripped their clothes, right? Which is the just deserts, why Menashe's inheritance in Israel is ripped. Yeah. Half is on this side and half is on that side, because he made them rip their clothes. So when they come, they finally come and they check the bags.
And says, half of on which side?
Half is on one side of the argument.
Oh, right. The other on the other. Right.
So when they get to back to Egypt, and they're checking the bags, and they find it in your Binyamin's bag, they say, okay, this is just this is too crazy. This saga is just too crazy. They said, you know, I have no explanation for such things. And they said, we're all your slaves. Chas v'shalom. I wouldn't put all of you to slavery because of this one indiscretion of this boy that I asked to see, and that comes down, and I find out he's a Ganav. What kind of family are you? Right? Chas v'shalom. I would not hold you all responsible for this indiscretion of your youngest brother. You can all go home, and I'm not going to kill him. I'm just going to have him as my slave, though. Right? So what is Yehuda? Yehuda comes forth and says, and makes a whole bit.
Can't do that to our father.
Really? I mean, I would this is a pretty good bargain, if you ask me, compared to what Dave himself said.
Right.
But it could be that the way that that they were just talking in a way like Reuven was talking. Mm-hmm. Not that I really mean that this guy should get killed and the rest of us should be slaves, but that's how sure I am that not one of us stole it. Right? So, but still, kill the one who took the cup, the rest of us slaves, and I'm not going to kill the guy who took the cup, I'm just going to take him as a slave, and the rest of you can go home. Surely, if you all get sold as slaves and I kill this one, the word will get back to Yaakov somehow that something really terrible happened to his children. Mm-hmm. Every last one of them. Right? Because they're all gone now. Yosef and the other 11. Right? So if I were Yehuda, I would take those. I would take that deal. What bargaining power do you have right here?
Yeah, no bargaining power.
About the way your father feels? So that's what's important to Yosef, is that I have already determined on the last trip they took that they have regrets about what they did to me. I just want to know ha'od avichai. And that comes through here, is that it's not just about what they did to their brother. They're acknowledging that they did something awful to their father. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here is the answer that Abravanel gives, which is amazing. Abravanel says that the brothers thought, as they were being taken back to Egypt, mm-hmm. right, with this accusation, that this must be the beginning of that exile that our great grandfather spoke to us about, or spoke to our father about. Mm-hmm. Right? Avram was told about an exile lasting hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. This must be how it's starting. What an ignominious way to start. Being sold as slaves, or who knows what they're going to do to us. Mm-hmm. Right? But when Yosef said, no, I just want one of you. You can all go home. So then they realized, okay, this is not the beginning of the galus. This is not the exile. Maybe it'll start soon, but this isn't it. Right? So I have to put up a fight. How much longer Yosef wanted to put... Did he end this when he wanted to? Because it says, V'lo yachol Yosef lihisapek. He couldn't hold it in anymore, implying that he wanted to hold it in. He just couldn't.
So what more was he going
to
do?
Yeah, what else was left to do? Yehuda called him on it. Yeah. Now, I think, did I discuss, again, I'm getting confused between the Sunday morning class, but the Haftorah of last week's Parsha, on the very rare case where Miketz is not Hanukkah, mm-hmm. is where Shlomo offers to cut a baby in half to determine mm-hmm. the true mother of the true mother in the story. So the Mephoshim, all right, that story does begin with a dream, and Parshim Zikates begins with a dream. But in that story, it seems that Chazal were not happy with the way Shlomo was ready to determine the true mother. Oh. There are some stories like this in ancient sapiential literature of determining the truth of something by threatening to deprive it from both sides. And there's Maris in the beginning of Bava Metzia, of course, in Shnayim Ochs and Batalis that smack of this kind of logic. But
yeah, you don't know if he would have gone through with it.
Our rabbis felt he went too far. You cannot. He didn't mean to go through with it, Shlomo, of course. But he was wrong in even making people think that he had the power to do it. Mm-hmm. That is wrong. A Jewish king does not behave that way. And ironically, of course, what's going to happen to his son because you were ready to cut a baby in half?
Separate the
kingdom.
The kingdom is cut in half.
By the way, something that the rabbis say in a different context is where David so impulsively tells Tziva and Mephibosheth, if you know what I'm talking about, in Shmuel Bet, to split the field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So again, in the Gemara in the second parak in Yuma says, the heavenly voice comes down and says, you so quickly you can say split the field, split the kingdom. Yeah. It means that David's impulsiveness was fated to be matched by Shlomo's, mm-hmm. and most important, by Rechavam, when they offered him to maintain his kingship if he would lower taxes and his confiscatory behavior of their properties and right. So when he took the advice of the young and immature ones to call their bluff, they rebelled and appointed the Ravam Ben Avot. This was all under prophecy from Achiah Shilomi, but this is what's happening. So that the So it's that the kingship does not go to the obvious one, which is Yosef. He's king. Mm-hmm. They're all bowing to him. Yeah. He should be the king. His descendant should be the king. It goes to the one who challenges him because he went over, he went too far. Yosef would have been the king. The king, Mashiach, was supposed to come from Yosef. But because Shlomo went too far and Rechavam went too far, and the king, so the kingdom had to go to number two. Who's number two? Yosef. So Ephraim, the king, all the kings of the northern tribes are from Yosef. So that's why we have two Mashiachs, the Mashiach and Yosef, and Mashiach and David.
But what did you say first? What, it went to number
two. Number two. Yosef should be number one, but because he oversteps his bounds of kingship and leadership here, so it goes to Yehuda. But if Yehuda behaves the same way, David, Shlomo, Rechavam, they'll lose something too. Okay? All right, these are the lessons of our story. And what I do want to start with next time is a little more on Yehuda. We still have... I'll go to Moshe and Shmos when we get to Shmos, but I want to finish out with Yaakov's 12 children in Bereishis. While we're reading Bereishis, we have two more weeks. Next week I want to contrast with the way Reuven tells his father, kill my two sons, with what Yehuda says to convince his father to actually let them take Binyamin, because he does go. Mm-hmm. Why was Yehuda more convincing? Okay, we'll start with that Mitzvah next week.
Yes, well, I thought you were going to discuss.
When it comes to this kind of thinking that Yosef, they were playing sticks on the brothers, where did this come from? Like, was that at the time, that's how people like spoke and thought? Or that's how, I don't know, that was a matter of like they thought of thinking? Like, what was it?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Probably so.